When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Great to have you here on the Clark Howard Show. You know, our mission is to serve you with advice and information that empowers you so you can make better financial decisions in your life. As I've said before, I can only get to a tiny fraction of the questions sent in to us. And that's why we have so many ways for you to get advice and information, starting with Clark.com. We post content every week. Our goal is to give you information that you can act on to improve your life in many different ways, whether it's spending less, saving more, or just improving the quality of your life with what we have for you. And then, of course, we have the Team Clark Consumer Action Center, where you're able to get one-on-one free advice from a member of our team available to you 30 hours each week to answer your questions. And all you do to find out all the details, how to reach a member of the team, is go to clark.com/CAC. So this is such an odd mix in the U.S. economy. This is so weird. I don't even know what the right analogy is for this. But we have the opposite of a bell curve in the United States. You know, a bell curve where things trail off at each end, and then in the middle, you find the typical. Right now, with how money is in people's lives, we have something really different than that, and we have this curve at either end going up instead of trailing off. And what are those two curves? On the good side, there's more money sitting on the sidelines in savings, money market accounts, things like that, pretty much ever, trillions and trillions of dollars that represent a lot of people who have been able to accumulate assets, accumulate wealth that's sitting on the sidelines. And then the other side, we have record levels of credit card debt, about $1.2 trillion collectively in unpaid credit card debt. That's balances that people are paying interest on every month, or balances that people are having trouble even paying the minimums on. So we have this really weird split, which is not at all normal. The credit card debt is crazy because, as I've shared with you in the past in different ways on more than one occasion, we had something happen in 2020. We had the COVID. But as a result of COVID, we had something happen that was unprecedented. The amount of credit card debt in the United States fell off a cliff. It dropped so fast and so much, economists were like, what is going on here? So what happened was, in so many places, people on their own or because of government restrictions, people weren't out and about and they spent a whole lot less money. And so people were able, with that, plus they had the pandemic assistance funds that came in, people were able to way pay down their credit card debt. Then you move forward to all the revenge spending when things opened back up and people missed life. And there was a certain joy to rejoin life. And people did revenge this, revenge that, revenge the other, and charge cards back up. You also had people who suffered from the inflationary cycle, who are lower on the income scale, and especially the big push in the price of groceries hurt those people very much. And you have people that were using credit as a way to not starve, to put food on the table. So there's many different factors have led to this almost $1.2 trillion in credit card debt. I mean, it's up like 80% from where it was in, I think, early 21, in just 3 years. Never had an increase like this before, after we'd never had a decrease like we had then. So there are any of a number of reasons, lifestyle or just life, just trying to survive life. And we know, if we're somebody listening who has credit card debt, we know pretty much, if we just have that conversation with ourselves, how we got to where we are with it. But now we're there. And so it's made people very vulnerable to the scamsters that say, hey, contact us. We're going to settle your debt for like nothing. Just come to us. We got it. And I want you to know, these debt relief scamsters are all over the place, saying that they're magicians. They're going to make your debt just disappear. They're not your hero. These people are out to hurt you, not help you. They have these signs at freeway exits, or the posts on social media, or do a Google search and all these scamsters show up. Know that these people who say like this, we can make your debt disappear, they're going to cheat you and make your situation worse than it already is. Do not believe their snake oil. If you or a family member or friend are struggling with debts, please go to a legitimate source for guidance. The nationally recognized clearinghouse is the National Foundation for Credit Counseling, nfcc.org. Also, you'll see the pitch. Oh, you go there, you'll find legitimacy. Okay. Other thing is, you'll see the pitches for filing for bankruptcy. Bankruptcy is not magic either, but there are people whose finances are so far gone, it is perhaps the last but best alternative, filing for bankruptcy. It's not a first or early alternative. It's when other legitimate strategies have failed. I know I will hear from people who started getting calls from debt collectors and they panic and they see an ad for a bankruptcy attorney and they go file when their situation was not past too late. Don't allow the upset of the debt collector to throw you off your game. And speaking of debt collectors, do you know you have the right to tell a debt collector to never bother you again? That's right. You can send them a letter saying you can dispute the debt if it's one you should dispute, but you also can tell them you are never to contact me again, and they can't.
And we have a sample letter on Clark.com.
That's awesome, because you have rights. It doesn't mean you don't owe the money, but it means they can't threaten you, they can't upset you, and they can't call you. I know all different reasons and circumstances you end up in over your head. Hopefully yours is a situation you can dig out from. But if not, there are resources available to help. Krista? Okay.
Matthew in Illinois says, I'm 33 and voluntarily elect an HMO instead of an HSA. It has a great coverage and very low deductible and is only $40 a month. I'm an actuary for a giant health insurer, so we're offered very affordable options. Is it wise to sacrifice the benefits of an HSA for this HMO? I max out all other retirement accounts every year, and the last few years have saved nearly 80% of my take-home pay while still being able to really enjoy life and travel very often. Go ahead. Are you right?
80% of your pay after you've already saved all that money? Wow. You should be doing your own podcast or your own,
seriously,
your own website to teach people. I save 80% of my pay and I still do whatever I want to with my life. Okay.
The money that I save by selecting the HMO is being saved in a taxable account. I'd love to have access to an HSA, but it seems silly to spend more monthly on insurance premiums and have a higher deductible just to have access to it. Any thoughts on this? I really hate missing out on the benefits, especially at such a young and healthy age.
So your circumstance is unusual because your health plan is being subsidized. The HMO is being subsidized by your employer, which is the health provider. So in your case, you're probably not missing anything by staying in the HMO. I mean, you're an actuary. You know the risks involved. You know the calculations. So in your case, I'm sure you've crunched the numbers and your decision is right. But I'm not worried about anything with you. If you are living a frugal life and still feeling like you get to do everything you want to do and saving 80% of your pay, 80% of your pay, keep doing exactly what you're doing.
Sarah in Iowa says, Social Security will decrease its monthly payouts by 20% starting in the year 2032. This was just passed. We need to be proactive in this today. Please do a detailed segment on this. How will it affect those of us who intend on retiring in 2034? Should we apply it for Social Security early?
Okay, so Sarah, there is nothing passed by anybody. What you're hearing about is actuarially Social Security, if Congress doesn't do something, is going to run out of money in about the next 10 years. When they run out of money, it means it'll be completely a pay-as-you-go program, meaning that Social Security benefits would be cut by 20%. That's the worst-case scenario. So the reality is Congress is going to fix it when the men and women who populate the U.S. Congress grow up and act like adults, because all of us know what the problem is. And one of the frustrations of the American people is our elected officials don't want to hand out any bad news, and so they avoid the problem. So, gosh, I wouldn't care if I ever got reelected if I was elected. I would go in and tell you, we got to fix it. And how we have to fix it, you're never going to vote for me again if I was elected. That's what they're afraid of, because they've got to do two things. They've got to reduce the benefits, but not what we're talking about here, a 20% cut, by changing when you receive Social Security. They're going to have to lengthen the retirement age up from 67. They're going to have to do that because Americans are living longer and we're an aging population. And they're also going to have to tax for Social Security more. Now, there I said it. I will never get another vote again. And it was fun being your congressman for 1 minute. So that's the deal. And we just need some people who can show some statesmanship, some maturity, and some patriotism, and do what's right for the country, and we're going to be fine. The longer we wait, the more difficult it is to do it, but we'll get it done. Don't worry. Social Security is not going to hit 10 years from now with much smaller checks. It'll be fixed first.
Tom in Pennsylvania says, my son will be selling his company for up to $5 million.
Good job.
There is no one I trust more than you, Clark, for advice. Would a Vanguard advisor be a good place to go for help? I've followed your advice and have used them and have a total world ETF and a total bond ETF. Is simple investing just as good for investing millions as investing thousands?
Yeah, it sure is. And you know, at Vanguard, with that kind of money, your son would face very low costs for them to manage the money, because Vanguard's peak is 0.30%, less than 1/3%. But as the assets you have on hand with them go up, the fee for them to manage your money as a fiduciary go down. So their highest point is much lower than anybody else, and then it goes down. As to whether that's enough in a situation like this, it's life-changing, Tom, for your son. It's not. I hope your son is getting good tax advice from a CPA on the structure of the sale and the tax implications of the sale. In addition, I hope he also has a lawyer who is knowledgeable in business sales, because certain ways of writing an agreement that an accountant and a lawyer coordinate on can reduce the tax obligations he'll have on the sale of the business. Those things come first before you worry specifically about what does he do with the $5 million, which is a good problem to have. But you want to get that stuff right up front. The other stuff is your son will be in a position now, he's got to do tax planning and estate planning moving forward. And that's why as he moves forward, he'll want the CPA who does tax, and he'll want a lawyer for the estate stuff, there'll be a lawyer who specializes in wills, estates, and trusts after the deal closes, different from a lawyer who might advise on how to handle the sale of the business. And congratulations to your son on this enormous success that he's had. Coming up ahead, speaking of investing, which way is the stock market going to go now, and how nervous do you need to be?
Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch, subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
There's a fair amount of nervousness now in people about their investments, whether they invest through a 401k at work, Roth IRA, traditional investment account, because the U.S. stock market has run way ahead of stock markets elsewhere in the world. And most Americans have a deafness to hearing how valuable it is to diversify your investing to outside the United States, too. We tend to be very heavily focused and concentrated as Americans on U.S. investing, even though 75% of capitalism, somewhere between 75 and 80% of capitalism, is outside the United States. It's why I do so much outside the U.S. in funds, index funds, instead of just in the United States, or ETFs, actually. But let's live with where Americans are. Most Americans are comfortable investing in U.S. funds. Total stock market, I mean, S&P 500, that kind of stuff. So we're at a point where the U.S. market is really, really valued. Some people would say overvalued, and that it's priced now for perfection. So the question is, am I selling anything right now? Because to me, the market looks overpriced. No. And the reason is, I'm in for the long term. I'm not putting money in there that I'm worried about being able to use next year, the year after, whatever. I have a long investment time horizon. And so if you know that, that should give you more peace of mind. Recently, I alluded to something that we have in a story about the stock market and is it overvalued and all that. I mentioned dollar cost averaging, and that's in our article too at Clark.com. Should you sell or stay put in the stock market? It's the title of the article at Clark.com. And it's because it's a react to what all that buzz is right now. Uh-oh, the sky's going to fall. Sky's not going to fall, but values could. And the question is, what do you do when they do fall? If you're in for the long haul, you stay put. But if it makes you really nervous with any money you have that you could put in the market, dollar cost averaging is kind of like taking a sedative. It calms you down. What you do is with dollar cost averaging, you just steady as you go. 401k is a form of dollar cost averaging because money goes in as contributions are taken from your paycheck, and then they're invested in whatever you put them in the 401k. So over time, when share prices are up, you buy less shares. When share prices are down, you buy more. It lowers the short-term risk and eliminates a lot of the anxiety. So yeah, the market's going to correct. Yeah, the market could have a bear market, which means it goes down 20% or more. But in most years, as you'll see in our briefing on Clark.com, the market has down years, but has a lot more ups than downs. So when you jump out and you say, I'm going to wait till it's safe to be in again, what happens is you miss so much of the run-up because you don't feel safe again till the market has spent a lot of time going back up and you miss the updraft because you sold out because you were worried about the downdraft. So my thing is, remember what the money's for, when you're going to need it, and stay the course. Here's something I want you to think about if you have been worried about this. When did the market last fall by a big amount? Don't remember, right? When did it fall by a big amount before that time? You don't remember. When before then? It is normal for investment markets to be overly exuberant for a while and then overly pessimistic for a while. But if you believe in the free market system like I do, being an owner of enterprises is how you create long-term wealth. For most of us, that doesn't mean owning a company. It means owning shares in a company, and you benefit from the increase in value. Now, the reason I'm into these funds, index funds and exchange-traded funds, that kind of stuff, instead of owning individual stocks, is companies have their day in the sun. And then even the greatest companies sunset. So you never know when today's hot company becomes tomorrow's cold one. And as human beings, we're really bad at knowing when has the tide turned on a particular company. So when I own hundreds of companies or thousands in a single fund or exchange-traded fund, ETF, then I'm not worrying about a particular company rising or another one going down. What's in now? NVIDIA is like the big hot thing at the time. Anyway, all I want to do is ride with the free market here and overseas. That's my thing. That's my game. If you're into latest hot stock tips, I'm not your guy.
Okay, Sam in Utah says, I moved to a new employer and they offer an employee stock purchase plan. I can contribute up to 15% of my income a year into this plan and they will contribute 34% in stock. I can withdraw my funds at any time and I still receive the match as long as I contributed in that quarter. Wow. What is a safe percentage to keep in a single employer stock versus the rest of my savings? This seems like a no-brainer to max out to get the full match. However, I don't want to be heavy on one single stock. I could max to the match and then sell and diversify, but I'd just be subject to short-term capital gains tax on whatever I sell if it makes money. Is it worth it to do?
So I don't know how long you're planning to stay at this company, Sam. It's a very intriguing thing to not grab a hold of all of it. So you put in 15% of your pay and you then have 20% of your pay because the employer is going to match with another third of what you put in. So you're at 20. So 20% of your pay in your employer stock, it's a bet on your employer. You'd have to hold for a year and a day to then, if you keep doing this over time and you're there over time, you would be able to sell at long-term capital gains, which would be much lower. And continually, as you are in the company for a while, you are continuing to buy shares, but at the same time, you're selling what you've had more than a year. You have to be careful because of something known as the wash rule, but I don't think you're going to have a wash rule problem in this case. Anyway, as long as you don't, you know, they say pigs get rich, hogs get slaughtered. As long as you manage it where you still are diversified with other ways that you save and invest so that you're not too heavy in your investments just in the employer stock, I want you to pick up that free money from the employer each year over time and then know that a year is a key number because then you move from short-term to long-term taxation.
Jennifer in Texas says, my mother just passed in early December.
I'm really sorry.
All right, Jennifer. My three sisters and I have inherited her home. She's probably the female version of you. No checked bags, last minute hotel deals, and a Costco fan. Her death was unexpected. So I'm in my mid-40s trying to navigate her life insurance, 401k, etc. I'm getting inundated with calls every day and mail solicitation regarding her home. The three of us are ready to sell soon. I was curious and searched Zillow and they have inaccurate info on the house. It says it has three bedrooms instead of four. Should I make a request to have this changed? And what is your advice with having a family member do the listing? Our aunt has recently moved back from California, but is awaiting her real estate license in Texas. Or should we sell the house as is? I want the best deal. And third, how should I deal with a sister who has failed to launch and is currently living there?
Oh boy. Sister thing's going to be a hard one.
Yeah.
Let's deal with the other things. One, you don't want to use the aunt as much as she's family and all that, because you don't want somebody who's just now getting their real estate license, was living in California, now moving back to Texas. Even if they're familiar with the area, they're not familiar enough with how the real estate market flows there, I would want you to not sell as is, because all these people hounding you are trying to get you to do a quick sale as a wounded duck and make money, scoring on your sadness at the loss of your mom, trying to just clear the decks and take advantage of you with a lowball offer. What you want to do is you want to be methodical about this. If there's any minor repairs the house needs, get them done. And you want to interview real estate agents in the area where your late mom's house is, get ideas about what they feel it's worth and what things you need to do to make it extra attractive to buyers. You do all that, you'll be good to go. The Zillow thing will automatically update once you hire an agent and they put in the correct listing. It'll all flow from that. You'll be fine. As for the sister, this is tough. Your sister's due the equivalent of 1/3 the value of the house. You said there are three sisters, so there's four total. So your sister's due 1/4 of the estate, I gather. And I don't know how much the rest of the estate is. One way potentially to handle it is that if there's enough other assets and your sister, who is not launched, wants to stay in the house, you could arrange as the executor with everybody's agreement that your sister gets the house and the other three of you split an equitable share of the remaining assets. And that would deal best with the sister who's failed to launch. If you have not gotten a attorney who specializes in estates, I'd like you to do that in the area where your mom lived and gather up all the assets, go in there and figure out how this is going to play. Because otherwise, this is unpleasant, because the three of you have to kick out the one sister who's living in the house, get it cleaned up and ready for sale, and get it on the market. And then where's your sister going to go? So there's the human element here and the straight money element. And that's why you need the right help to guide you through this the right way. And again, I'm really sorry about your mom. Mm-hmm.
Kevin in Connecticut says, I saw an article about razor blade theft, and being a loyal Clark Howard listener, this sentence caught my eye. Quote, many adult women and men shave at least twice a week, and the American Academy of Dermatologists recommends replacing razor blades or cartridges after 5 to 7 shaves.
5 to 7 shaves?
Replace a blade once a week. Thanks to Clark, I dry my blade after each use and easily get 1 to 2 months out of a blade.
Kevin, 5 to 7 shaves. What are the dermatologists doing? Are they on the take from Gillette?
Maybe they think it's going to have bacteria. I don't know.
I can't imagine. And those of you who are long-term listeners, you know I made one blade last 14 months, like 4 more than I should have. Just dry your blades thoroughly after each use. You'll be fine.
Wait for the towel, right?
Well, you're not supposed to use a towel. You're supposed to.
That could have bacteria,
dry.
Right?
Okay. Yeah. But you get that blade dry. It goes on and on and on. Blades don't deteriorate from shaving. They deteriorate from moisture. And who knows what the dermatologists are talking about. Maybe they have very
good
medical or scientific reasons.
Just go to Clark.com. Clark stinks.
But man, those blades will last a long time. And I should disclose again that now I use an electric razor most of the time. You happy with it?
Yep.
Okay. So
TV wants you to do that, right?
No, TV wants me to use.
Oh, they do. Oh.
Yeah, so the day that I do TV is the day I still shave with a regular razor. All the rest of the time I use electric, because 4K on TV, every last thing shows up. Mm-hmm. 4K is not friendly to the human face, let me tell you. It's not at all. But razor blade theft is really in, let's think, what else? Baby formula? What are the things or the retailers just going crazy over being stolen?
Well, everything's being locked up, in all those departments, like any kind of thing you'd buy in a pharmacy department or whatever. There's a lot of theft. It feels like everything's getting stolen. It's crazy.
Things go in waves. This is not forever. I know that a lot of people are really down on where we are as a society and down on our future and all that. we're going to be fine. We're going to self-correct. We're going to get this together. And I know that to be the case. Pollyanna Clark says, we're going to be fine. And we're not going to have to lock things up forever. Promise.
Yeah,
I promise.
Because all the spying on us will prevent that from happening.
Yeah, but Amazon gave up on their walkout stores. Yeah. You know that?
I do.
Yeah, so who knows? But we're going to be fine. Promise. And with that having been said, tomorrow we get to hear why I'm not fine, why I'm not good, why I did not serve you well, because tomorrow is time for Clark Stinks. Have a great day, and remember what we're about. You learn ways to save more, spend less, and avoid getting ripped off.